Are you getting blamed for everything that's going wrong in the relationship? Maybe it's not you at all. Maybe you're being made to think you're crazy. Visit loveandabuse.com, download the Mean Workbook, and start your journey back to sanity today. Are you annoyed by affirmations? Are you tired of that same old, rehashed personal growth advice that all seems to boil down to, "Think positively and all your problems will go away"? If affirmations feel like lies and positive thinking feels like denial, then I want you to get ready. The Overwhelmed Brain is here to help you create the life you want now. Hello, and welcome to The Overwhelmed Brain. My name is Paul Coliani, and this is the show where I help you tackle life's toughest challenges. It's all about increasing your emotional intelligence, strengthening your self-worth and self-esteem, and empowering you so that you can make decisions that are right for you. Everything I talk about on this show is my personal opinion and is meant for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult a medical or psychological professional before making any changes that could affect your physical or mental health. All right, for this show, it's going to be a variety show, sort of a potpourri. I'm not going to make it any specific subject. I'm just going to read some of the emails that I've received, not the whole email, but I'm going to read you the gist of the email to perhaps tackle a bunch of subjects. And some of them might have to do with your own personal growth and development. Some of them might have to do with relationships. And we'll see where this show goes. I don't have this planned out. You know, it's the holidays. And I'm in the middle of buying a house with my girlfriend, and everything is just happening at once. Closing is this December 27th. This show is being recorded on December 22nd, and Christmas is December 25th. And so all these things are happening at once, and all these hurdles that we're trying to climb over, all these obstacles that keep popping up, and all the things necessary to get things done. I'm sure some of you probably feel the same way. I just posted a question in the Overwhelmed Brain Empowerment group on Facebook. If you're not a member, feel free to join. It's a closed group where you can share your personal thoughts and such, and people can comment on it, and others share their stuff, and you can help support them through their struggles and or wins or anything like that. But it's a nice, non-judgmental, safe place to share who you are. Well, anyway, I put this question out there that says, "This time of year makes me blank." And all kinds of neat responses, from annoyed and irritated and lonely and depressed to happy and cheerful and loving life and grateful. And this is the normal experience. You know, I didn't want people to show their social media face. I wanted them to show their real face. And all I mean by that is I wanted them to be real. I want you to be real. I want you to be able to say, "I'm not having a good day," when someone says, "Hey, how you doing?" And you can feel free to say, "I'm not doing too well. I'm not having a good day." Now, that sounds like it might bring the other person down. It might bring the room down. But I want you to have the right to express it if you want to. I want you to be able to say what's on your mind. That doesn't mean you should always say what's on your mind. I just want you to have the choice to say what's on your mind. You know, another question came up in the empowerment group regarding family and religion. And when your significant other's family brings up religion and why aren't you praying? Why aren't you studying the Bible? Why aren't you going to church? And you're not of that faith or belief. What do you do? What do you say? How do you get out of that? How do you communicate in a way that's not offensive to someone else when they're pushing their beliefs down your throat? And I think that's a good time to really consider your choices when it comes to expressing yourself. And that doesn't mean you automatically express yourself. I mean, you can. I teach that. I might do that myself, but I also might not express myself. I also might do something else when it comes to that. If someone was pushing their beliefs and their religion down my throat, I would be inclined to be the path of least resistance. I would be inclined to answer in a way that would cause the least amount of tension? Well, that could be the old people pleaser in me, sure, but there's some benefit to that. Because let's just say that you have to spend a few days with people and they're pushing beliefs or perceptions or political stuff down your throat that you disagree with or whatever. Are you going to disagree so that they become irritated and angry with you and then they won't leave it alone and it becomes a constant debate for days? Are you going to do that? Do you want to do that? Most of the time, the answer is no, I don't want to do that. Let's just not even talk about it. That could be a good response. I don't want to talk about that. Oh, come on. What do you mean you don't want to talk about it? You're going to hell if you don't talk about it. Wow. What do you do with that? I don't want to talk about it. Okay. But if they want to talk about it, then what? What do you do then? What do you do when people keep pushing their beliefs, their perceptions, their values onto you, and you don't want to get into any strife or tension with them? What are your choices? I believe you should have a choice. I believe you should have the choice to say, well, I believe differently, and I respect your beliefs. Now, what'll happen with some people is they will say, what? You don't believe this? What? Aren't you afraid of whatever, going to hell, immigrants coming into the country, if you're talking politics, this, that, whatever their beliefs are, they're starting to push on you. Aren't you afraid of this? Or what? Doesn't that make you anti-religious, anti-political, anti-American, anti-Muslim, anti-this, anti-that? They start pushing it on you and they won't let it go. What do you do? It's just like, how do you get out of these situations? I personally, when this starts, I mean, first of all, if you're hanging around these people voluntarily, you know, that's something you might want to reconsider if you don't like getting into these conversations. Or if you don't mind getting into these conversations and it's a healthy debate, then this message really isn't for you because, you know, that's your choice. That's great. But you should also have a choice to say, I don't wish to talk about it anymore. You can even say, I think we'll disagree on a lot of stuff and I respectfully decline to talk about it. However, I respect your beliefs. I respect your choices. I'm not here to encroach on them. I'm not here to disagree with you. I have a feeling there's probably a lot of stuff that we agree on, and there's a lot of stuff that we disagree on. So I would love to spend quality time with you instead of time debating issues that really probably won't go anywhere and will probably make us both upset. That might be one approach. The approach I like to take sometimes, not often, but if this happens, if it becomes a little bit overbearing, if they become a little bit too belligerent and wanting to really stress how much I should believe what they believe, I might say, wow, you're absolutely right. I should believe that. That's me. It's a little manipulative. It's deceptive. I hear you. It's maybe skirting on bad morals because it's not true, but I don't want tension for days. I want to have peace for days. I look at the bigger picture, the bigger vision for my next few days with these people. What do I want to accomplish? I want to accomplish peace while I'm here. That'll be like one of my big visions for this prolonged period of time, is to have peace. How do I get there? If I can't get there by disagreeing, maybe I'll just agree. And when they say, you should go to church every Sunday and Wednesday night, and I say, well, I don't go to church, and they go, you don't? How could you not? I might say, well, you know, tell me more. Well, you know, my church is this and my church is that, and God teaches this and the Bible teaches that, or whatever religion they're talking about. I'll go, that's fascinating. Thank you for sharing all of this. I am so grateful for this education. Now, I'm not going to agree and say, yes, I'll do it right away, but I'm going to continue thanking them and showing curiosity and fascination of what they're sharing with me. But as soon as they get into that proselytizing mode, where they're wanting to convert me on the spot, again, it could be religion, could be politics, could be a perception, a belief, a value. As soon as that starts happening, then that's when we feel like we're being painted in a corner. Now we see our limited options because we don't want strife, we don't want conflict, and we know that disagreeing with them will bring conflict. I'm not against disagreeing because people should honor you honoring yourself. I believe that should be the way things are. And when you honor yourself and someone doesn't like you honoring yourself, feel free to say, you're not honoring me, honoring myself. This does not feel very supportive of someone with your beliefs. I said this is a variety show. It doesn't mean I'm going to give you 100% perfect advice today. And some of it will be helpful and some of it will be a little maybe sarcastic. Because, you know, we deal with some people that don't have our belief systems and don't have our values and don't have our political views. And sometimes they're relentless. And what do you do when they're relentless? Sometimes you have to use them against themselves. And I'm going to say something that might offend some people, but I've been known to quote other people's religious scripture to remind them that how they're treating me is not in alignment with what they believe. That's a little edgy. That's a little harsh. And it can work beautifully. I'm not saying you should do this. I'm saying you should have a choice to express yourself in any way you want. And in a perfect world, you should be allowed to be in alignment with your own values, follow your own religious choices, political choices, have in mind your own beliefs and perceptions about the world. And it should be okay if people disagree with that. And it should be okay that when they disagree with it, they still respect your position in all of those areas. And all I mean by that is that when you respect someone's position, you can say, I don't agree with that, but I respect that you have that opinion. I've even been known to do this with people that write me hate mail. Fortunately, I don't get a lot. But when it comes in, I had one a few weeks ago. You should be ashamed of yourself. How dare you teach what you teach? And I won't get into the details because I wrote her back. I don't know if she ever received what I wrote back. But when I wrote back, I was very kind. I told her, I honor you for honoring yourself. I value that you can express yourself with such clarity and candor that you aren't afraid to just put it all out there. Tell me what I'm doing is wrong, or I don't know what words she used. Something about how if I represent coaches in the world that we're all doomed or something like that. It was really, really harsh. And I thanked her for it. I thanked her because I want people to be able to express themselves around me and not feel like it's too dangerous to do so. It doesn't mean I allow it to happen. It doesn't mean I take abuse. It just means I want people to feel comfortable being themselves. Because usually as soon as they get it off their chest, they don't show up as the same person the next time. So when you're around people that are just all over you and they're venting and saying hurtful things, sometimes they just need to get over that initial hump of all that internal energy they need to get out of their system so that they don't show up that way again. The problem is people keep showing up that way over and over and over again, sometimes because we disagree with them and have conflicts with them and they never get a chance to express fully what's going on in them because we feel offended and we want to defend ourselves and we honor ourselves, so we'll stand up for ourselves. And when we do that, they might stuff it back down to come out at a later day. That's why I kind of love breakdowns. I kind of love explosions. You know what? Explode. Just do it. Get it out. Get it out of your system so that this can finally come to a head. If it comes to a head, then maybe we can finally get past it. And sometimes that happens when you're with family, when you're in a relationship, and someone just goes off on you and you don't necessarily fight back, but at the same time, you don't also recoil and be fearful and act wounded. You just allow them to be themselves and you stand up in your own space with confidence, knowing who you are. And they finally get it all out until they're exhausted. And then you say, thank you for sharing that. That can make someone feel acknowledged, safe, validated, a whole bunch of stuff. So I kind of went around the world here with some different aspects of this topic. But again, it's the Variety Show. Thank you for joining me. We'll be right back. And I'm going to read little tiny portions of emails and see what we can address in today's episode. Be right back after this. Thank you. You know, over at loveandabuse.com, I have a little checklist of items. And when you take these items and you put them all together, you can form a bigger picture of what's happening in a relationship. Well, one of the items is, do you often pick your words carefully so as not to upset your partner? And in the last segment, we're talking about things that upset people. And when you're in a relationship of any sort, whether it's romantic, family, friends, if you have to walk on eggshells because you know that if you don't pick your words carefully, you'll upset the other person, this is no way to live. This is not the way you want to feel all the time. It reminds me of a joke. It reminds me of a joke I heard. I think the comedian is Stephen Wright, and he has these one-liner jokes. I heard it way back in the 80s. And he says, you know, when you lean back in a chair and you're on two legs and you're right at the edge of falling over, but you're right at that balance point, but you don't fall over, but you start to and you catch yourself. He goes, I feel like that all the time. And it was funny, but at the same time, that's how some people feel. That is unfortunately how some people feel in some relationships. And that really depresses me. I shouldn't say depressed, but it really upsets me. Because no one should feel like they're walking on eggshells. I mean, I felt that way in a relationship before, where I better not say anything because it might tick her off, and I don't want to tick her off because if she's upset with me, she might get angry and she might leave the relationship, so I better be careful not to say the wrong thing. So I would walk on eggshells. And that's just no way to relate to someone else, and that's not really a mutually beneficial arrangement of any sort. Because you should both feel comfortable around each other. And this is just one component. If you're in a relationship where you're afraid to pick your words because you might upset the other person, that's a good component to address, especially with someone that's supposed to love you and support you and want you to be happy. That's a good component to bring up and say, you know, I always feel like I'm walking on eggshells around you. Let's talk about that. I know some people will say that I've tried to talk about that, or I can't talk about that because XYZ. But if that exists, that's one of the many components that shouldn't exist in a relationship that you spend a lot of time in. And if you're in that situation, I'm not saying you're bad or wrong for allowing it to happen. I'm just saying that if you think that it's normal, it's not. It's not supposed to be part of a relationship. Now, it will be with some toxic people. I'm not saying that there aren't toxic people. My stepfather, for example, very toxic. I expect that. I expect that if I say the wrong thing, it might set him off. Well, when he's inebriated, I should say. But at the same time, it's not a relationship I nurture at all. But some relationships we're in, we nurture. We want to have. We want to stay in these relationships. And we have to really assess the importance of the quality of the relationship we're in. Because if your day-to-day feeling is walking on eggshells and not wanting to upset your partner by saying the wrong thing, there needs to be a stepping stone out of that, because a person who loves and supports you and wants you to be happy probably doesn't want you to feel like you're walking on eggshells all the time. And if they do, there's something not right about that. So I could go on and on about that, but I think I got that point across. And I want you to be aware of what kind of relationship you're in. If you're experiencing any challenge or difficulty in your relationship, head over to loveandabuse.com and check out the Mean Workbook so that you can assess your relationship and find out if there are factors to it that really shouldn't exist that maybe have become the new normal for you. The new normal should be better, not worse, than when you started. Or at least, if not better, the same. Something that started off great and it stayed great, or something that started off great and it settled down, that's fine too. But that's something that started off great and now you're walking on eggshells every day. I don't want that for you. Go to loveandabuse.com and check out the Assessment and Healing Guide for Difficult Relationships, the Mean Workbook. Welcome back. Like I said, this is the Potpourri Variety Show, and I'm going to talk about email that came in on jealousy. Someone wrote and said, you know, my boyfriend looks at these women and I get jealous. I feel insecure. What do I do about it? Well, because this is a variety show, I'm going to give some short answers. I could go into depth. I did have an episode on jealousy that it would be good to check into for sure. But I like to go to the place of When you're jealous, when you feel like your significant other is checking people out, I like to bring it back to what's going on inside of you. So what's going on inside of you when you're jealous? So she said it's insecurity, and you know she doesn't think that he's ever going to cheat, but she feels like that he shouldn't be checking out other women. Is she good enough? You know, there's feelings of low self-worth, low self-esteem. And when you're experiencing jealousy, I think it's vital that you don't push your fears outward onto your partner. I think it's vital that you don't do that, because you need to deal with what's going on inside of you and work on yourself. So what is happening during jealousy is that you feel like there's a threat of some sort. I mean, this is one probable component, is that you feel like there's a threat. Like if they're looking at someone else, that must mean I'm not good enough. So already we can have one check for self-worth, right? Self-worth and self-esteem. If they're looking at someone else, there's a possibility they could cheat on me. There's another check for trust. So there's self-worth and self-esteem issues, and I possibly don't trust this person. And they may not trust the other person too. The other person that they're looking at, well, what if she or he comes by and wants to entice my partner in some way? Well, we still look at that as trust in a sense of, do you have trust for your partner? Do you have trust for the person that you're with? So those, I believe, are the two main issues with jealousy, the two main components. I'm sure there are other components in there, but when you look at those two components, what are you feeling the most of? If you've ever experienced or you do experience jealousy, what are you feeling the most of? If it's not about trust, then it's all about you. That's a generalization. I know it is, but let's just say that was true. If it's not about you trusting the person you're with, then it's all about you. And if it's all about you, then you got to deal with it. It's not about them at all. Yeah, but they're looking at those people and they shouldn't be looking at those people. Let's take that out of the picture, because I guarantee you, you look at people too. And if you say, no way, never, that's fine. I'll go along with that. That's okay. There might be some hardwiring in there that's been reprogrammed, but we are hardwired to look at other people. We are hardwired to see the peacock feathers of other people. That's the analogy I'm using, where the peacock spreads their feathers and now it's colorful and, hey, where's a mate? I need a mate. Look at me. I'm not saying that people do this necessarily, but some people do. And when that happens, when we notice someone, those peacock feathers, we can get enticed. We can be intrigued. We can be fascinated. And this fascination, it does what I like to call activates our system. We get, for lack of a better word, turned on. Now, this doesn't even have to go into the sexual part of turned on. It's just, it's activating us. We're noticing it. We're getting intrigued by that person's look, or that person's smell, or that person's personality. There are activations going on inside of us that turn us on. Again, trying not to make that the sexual reference of that. But I think you get what I mean. Where, okay, so now our partner is, quote, turned on by someone else, is activated. They're looking at someone else. What's that doing to me? Where does it put me? How do I feel about myself? Because I guarantee you, if you already felt something less than who you are and what you are, that you're probably going to feel more of it, because it will amplify when there is external validation of that. This happens when we base our self-worth and self-esteem on external validation, and that's where we get in trouble. When we go outside of ourselves to validate who we are, what we are, how wonderful we are, how wonderful you are, how beautiful you are, when we do that, when we seek validation from outside ourselves, we set ourselves up for failure, and we set up ourselves for jealousy and feelings of possessiveness, feelings of wanting to control another person. Because if we can control them, they won't look or think about anyone else, and they'll only look at me and think of me. Now, I'm not talking about relationships that have experienced infidelity or betrayal or anything like that. That's a different set of variables. There's already, I mean, you can actually look at that as part of the whole trust thing and other components too. But I'm talking about relationships that are fairly healthy and there's feelings of jealousy from one partner to the other. And those feelings come from wanting to be externally validated. And I'm going to say this, and it's going to sound wrong at first, but not allowing our partner to be themselves in the way they're hardwired. And this is a little bit of a sensitive topic, but when we allow our partners to be who they are, meaning they're hardwired to be attracted to certain types of people, then they get to experience themselves as the person they want to be, but bring that themself person back home to you. So that's one of the most important components of this, is that when our partner is checking out someone else, and I'm talking about checking out, I'm not talking about deep emotional texts or conversations or emotional affairs that can go on. I'm just talking about you're out and about and your partner notices someone else and you see them notice someone else. What does it do to you? Do you internalize it? Do you become sad, angry, upset? Because if you do, then I want you to direct the energy around that toward yourself so that you can become self-loving enough to honor who you are so that you take care of yourself in that moment, because it's probably indicating some sort of self-worth or self-esteem issue. And if that's the case, you need to do some parenting of yourself. Because the more you love yourself, the more you accept yourself, the more you make it known to yourself that you are amazing, that is one of the things that keeps you from being jealous and controlling, because you know you're good. You know you're great. You know you're hot stuff. Even if you don't believe it, you have to know it to a certain level. Otherwise, the person that you're with wouldn't be with you. So it's vital to remember that this person chose you because you are who you are. And if you're comparing yourself to someone else and they didn't choose them, why would you care about looking like that other person or being like that other person in any way? Because you're the one they chose. So I know this is a difficult topic, and it definitely gets deeper and deeper, because jealousy is one of those sort of along the lines of obsession, where obsession is one of the hardest emotional concepts to overcome. When you're obsessed about someone, like an ex, you're so obsessed you can't stop following them on social media. This is one of those things where obsession, you just cut cold turkey and you just have to deal with it and go through your withdrawal. It's sort of like a drug. Where jealousy, it's harder to cut jealousy because you're with the person that you're with. And if they are checking other people out, then it's more difficult. So you have to deal with it all the time. It's always in your face. But it does come back to you, not to them. Now, that doesn't mean you don't talk about it. It doesn't mean you don't say something like, you know, when you look at that person, it makes me feel uncomfortable. It makes me feel like you don't find me sexy. Because there's got to be a little balance here. If they're not showing you any attention, if they're not complimenting you, if they're not enticed by you, and they're only enticed by others, if they don't show you that they love you and they care about you and that you're attractive to them and all this other stuff, then I can understand how that jealousy can build and build and build, turn into resentment, turn into upset, turn into sadness, and that needs to be addressed. So if you haven't talked about any jealousy that you might have, and it's building and building and building, then this is the time to do it. It's important to do it before it builds any more. Now, it doesn't mean you might not experience little bits and bouts of jealousy here and there. I think that's normal. Hey, you know, my girlfriend's looking at some guy or talking to them on the phone, and hey, that was an ex of hers from 20 years ago. Hey, I have some feelings about that. Where are these feelings coming from? What are these about? So I have to, you know, this is me talking. I have to think about that. What is this a threat? Is, you know, I go through the questions. What am I really jealous about? Do I think she's going to leave me? Well, no. So some old programs that sometimes run in the background where we're afraid that our partner might be with someone else or might find someone else more attractive. The bottom line is that our romantic partners in life are going to find other people attractive. I mean, I hate to tell you that. It's just going to happen. You're going to find other people attractive. But there's so many factors that make a good partner. It's all attraction, but it's not just visual. It's emotional, it's personality, it's your likes and dislikes, it's your values, it's so many things that make up a relationship. And if you only base it on visual, that is going to really come back and bite you, and you're going to set yourself up for disappointment because you see your partner staring at someone else and suddenly you're stuck on the visual and you're thinking, oh, what about me? I'm not good enough. I gained some weight. I did this. I did that. This is why it's so important to have open communication with your partner. My girlfriend knows that I have a physical attraction toward certain types of people. I don't always comment on it, and I think that's important too. When your partner is uncomfortable about you commenting on other people and it becomes a source of tension, you got to have this communication. You got to make sure that you know what bothers your partner so that you don't repeat it. So that's good too. But again, I want to keep this short. Jealousy, I've talked about it in other episodes. I'm going to go on to the next item for conversation, which is kind of a segue of what we were just talking about. Someone wrote to me and said, what about body comments? When people comment on your body, like I grew up and my dad used to comment on my body, like you're getting too fat or no one's going to like you because you look like this. And I just developed these insecurities. And what do I do about that? Because now when my boyfriend says something about my body, I get upset. And, you know, how can I go through this? Do you have any insights for me? And so I read this thinking, yeah, that's a great question. I think that's a good one to address. That's also a deep question because it's hard to get away from our bodies. It's hard to get away from how we look. We look in the mirror. We see ourselves. We have to buy clothes for ourselves. Some fit, some don't. I mean, eventually. And some look good, some don't. And then when we take our clothes off and then people see us, what are they thinking? Maybe they think I should lose weight. Maybe they think I should gain weight. Maybe they think I'm too small, I'm too big. I don't know. This is what goes through our minds, right? We have all these thoughts and we can be very afraid that somebody else might think negatively of us. And you know, I hear this from supermodels, you know, I read that supermodels are just so scared of how other people view them, even though they're, quote, perfect. And nobody's perfect. I don't think that's true at all. I think we all are who we are. I don't think anybody's perfect because how do you judge perfection? What do you compare it to? What is perfection? You have to be a certain weight. You have to be a certain height. I mean, what is perfect? So there is no perfect. So once we accept that there is no perfect, that's helpful. Yes, but I want to look good in front of so-and-so's eyes. And when he or she says something about my body, it makes me upset. And so-and-so says, you don't have to overreact like that. I didn't mean to be mean. I'm just commenting. Well, let me just say this about that. When I was married, this is exactly what I did to my wife. I would make comments like that. And what it does, if you do this, if you're the type of person that makes comments about your partner's body or anyone's body, what it does is it makes them feel A, inferior, B, if they already feel bad, then it compounds how they feel. So now they feel worse. C, if they have a condition that they can't get past for whatever reason, now they feel broken. D, if they've been trying and working on it for, who knows, months or years, and they've never gotten to the point they like, now their efforts feel pointless. And, geez, I could go on, E, F, G. There's so many reasons not to criticize someone else's body because we can't get away from our bodies. So I believe it's so important just not to talk about someone else's body. Let me rephrase that. I don't necessarily mean you can't say, hey, honey, you have a great body. I'm not saying that. I'm saying when it comes to criticizing, a lot of us are already self-conscious. And most of us already know what we don't like about our bodies. Most of us do, because we are comparing ourselves to other people. So for someone else that we love and feel trust with and feel safe with to come along and say, you know, you've gained some weight or whatever they're saying. And, you know, I'd like to see if you can lose some weight. You know, if that's the kind of talk that's coming out in the relationship, that's going to be detrimental and harmful. And it's going to build resentment and it's going to cause a lot of trouble. I say this from experience because I was the one who did it. and it wore her down. She lost her passion for life because she felt like all the things I just mentioned. She felt inferior. She felt broken. She felt like there was nothing she could do to please me because she couldn't escape from this body. So I want you to think about that. And if you have to have a conversation with the person that's saying those things to you, that's a good thing to say. I can't escape from this body. This is the body I have. And here's the most important words. If you don't like it, that's your problem. If you don't like it, you're the one making the choice to be with me. If you don't like it, that's too bad because that's who I am. And in fact, it may look worse tomorrow. You know what? Put them through the worst case scenario. It may look worse tomorrow. In fact, it may look 10 times worse in a year. And the question isn't, am I going to do something about it? That's not the question. The question is, are you going to be loving, accepting, and supporting enough to be with someone who's going to look 10 times worse in the future? Will you be able to do it? Because this is going to make them face themselves. And that's vital. You got to make people face themselves sometimes. This is going to make them face, wow, you know, this is what I had to do in my marriage. I had to think, could I possibly accept that if she got larger and larger, because that was my issue in my marriage, that was a huge judgment on my part. She was an emotional eater and I couldn't get past it. And my thought was, she's going to get larger and larger and I'm going to be not attracted to her anymore. And then I'm going to feel like I can't do anything. So I had to turn that back in and ask myself, wait. So if you can't accept that, if you can't accept who she is now, and she's only going to get bigger, which is going to make you feel whatever you feel, then maybe you need to honor yourself and leave her. And when I heard myself say that, I was like, what? Wait a minute. Is that what I want to do? I had a come to Jesus moment. I had to really face myself, face my decisions, and take responsibility for my decisions, take responsibility for my behavior, for my choices in life. And so my choice was to stay. And after I thought about, well, if she gains weight and I don't like that, am I just going to leave then? And so my answer was, well, yes, if I'm going to honor myself, that's what I'm going to do. And when I said that, I said those words, either out loud or in my head, I forget, I suddenly realized what it meant. I suddenly realized what my behaviors, what my judgment meant. It meant that I was going to lose a lot more. It meant that I was going to lose everything, my marriage, everything. And that realization superseded, overrode the judgments that I had. It overrode the visual of what my expectations are supposed to be. It overrode all of the dysfunction and toxicity that I had and made me take responsibility for my choice of staying in the relationship or not, instead of pushing all my critical comments onto her, my judgments onto her, and that she had to change in order for me to be happy. Once I took it back and took responsibility for my decision to stay with someone that apparently I was unhappy with, then I had to accept that I was making the choice to stay, not that she wasn't doing what I wanted. Hard to explain, but when you decide to turn it back in on yourself, or your partner turns it back in on themselves, just like I was saying, this person who gets these body comments, for her to say, look, if you don't like what you see, then it's your fault for staying so that you continue to see it. And then they might say, well, yeah, I'm just saying that, you know, you could work out a little bit and change things. And you come right back and say, yeah, but if I don't, is that going to make you unhappy? Are you going to be dissatisfied in this relationship? Let's just say I don't. Let's just say that I want to eat chips and dip every night. That's my choice. Are you going to allow me to have that choice? And are you going to be okay with it? Because if your answer is no, then maybe you should start thinking about changing your mind about this relationship. Maybe you need to honor yourself so that you get what you want. And like I said, this really makes them face themselves and takes them out of this shallower thinking that they're on. Like, if she just changed, I'd be happier. Because if you're in a constant state of waiting for something to happen outside yourself, you're always going to be disappointed. I sound like a broken record there, but it is true. When you wait for something to happen outside yourself, you get disappointed, which means you have to make decisions for yourself. And if you are with someone that you are having problems with, that you feel like they don't look good enough or they're not perfect enough, and you decide that you want to criticize them for it and judge them for it and tell them what they should do better, the relationship's going to go sour and it's going to stay sour. until you bring it back to yourself and realize that you are the one that keeps yourself in a position to be with someone that you continue to criticize instead of criticizing your own decisions to stay. That doesn't mean I want you to just leave. That's not the point at all. The point is, when you bring it back, you take responsibility for your criticalness, for your judgments, and you start making decisions for yourself instead of waiting for the world to change for you. So I hope this helps answer the question about body comments and things like that. When we come back, I've got one more thing to talk about, and then we'll close the show. Welcome to the Variety Show. Be right back. All right, welcome back. I just want to comment on one thing about the self-worth and self-esteem that we talked about in the last segment. I wrote these things down. I really wanted to be able to integrate what I was talking about in that segment, but I didn't. So I'm going to tell you right now. Self-worth, let me give you a couple definitions. Self-worth derives from your interpretation of how important you are in the eyes of those who raised you. Let me say that again. Self-worth derives from your interpretation of how important you are in the eyes of those who raised you. In other words, you are interpreting how the people who raised you, your caretakers, your mom and dad, how much value they put on you. Remember that, because insecurity about yourself when your partner, like for example, is checking out other people, is almost always about self-worth. I mean, when it's not, it's about trust, but if you remember that your self-worth derives from your interpretation, which could definitely be wrong, it's just an interpretation of how important you are in the eyes of those who raised you, then you start to understand that maybe I'm interpreting it wrong. There's one thing I want you to remember to do. You have to separate yourself from your self-worth. I know that's weird, and I'm going to kind of explain it in a moment, but let me tell you what self-esteem is. Self-esteem comes from how you feel about yourself based on your self-worth. I look at self-worth as something that begins in childhood. Oh, look at my mom and dad love my drawing. I feel more worthy. They'll say, you're so wonderful. You're such a great drawer. And self-esteem is when you grow up and you take all these little moments that you built self-worth, and your self-esteem is how you feel about yourself based on all those moments, based on all those moments of self-worth. So if you want to start to dissociate yourself from low self-worth and low self-esteem, is to separate your self-worth from yourself or from your self-esteem. Because yourself today is sort of made up of your self-esteem, at least that's one component. So if my self-esteem is made up of all these terrible moments of low self-worth growing up, how do I separate who I am today, my self-esteem, from my self-worth? Well, here you go. And this might be tough, so you might have to think about it. You do it by deciding not to trust your interpretation of how important you are to those who raised you. So you do it by deciding that your interpretation is wrong. You just decide that it's wrong. And when you decide that your interpretation is wrong, you parent yourself. You treat yourself as if you are your own child and that you are full of worthiness and significance. How do you do that? That sounds easy, right? No. It can be, I guess, if you've meditated a lot. But you do that by accepting that those who raised you feel exactly as you do at your lowest. So when you feel the lowest self-esteem, the lowest self-worth, you have to remember that those who raised you at that time feel the exact same way. That's one part of this. For example, if you feel like a stupid person, so do they. Your caretaker, your parents, they can only mold you in the way they've been molded. So you got to remember that the way you feel today, if you haven't done any self-growth work, if you haven't done any self-esteem or self-worth work, then the way you feel today is the way your parents feel. Now, that's not always true. I'm making another generalization, but let's just say that the way you feel is the way your caretaker or your parent feels, which is why you became who you were. And even if they were fully narcissistic and all into themselves and didn't care about you at all, they were molded that way. Sure, there's conditions that you can be born with, but it still comes from somewhere. It has to come down the line, the lineage, the bloodline. So what does that mean? That means we have to break the bloodline. We have to break the lineage. We have to say, look, I am not my worth. You are not your worth. You are not your self-esteem. You are not them. You are not your interpretation of what you believed they thought of you. You're not any of that. This is where you really start the separation process. It's almost like the opposite of becoming one with the universe. You're actually becoming one with yourself because you're eliminating all the tendrils of the conditioning, of the dysfunction, of the toxicity. You say, I am not this feeling of self-worth. That's not me. That's just a feeling. It comes and it can go. And I am not the interpretations that I've believed, the stories that I've told myself of what I believed my parents or my caretakers thought about me. I am not that. You know that Hebrew phrase, I am that I am? Well, mine is, I am not that I am. I'm going to get a lot of flack for that, so I'm going to move on. My point is, when you separate yourself from the idea of self-esteem, the idea of self-worth, the idea that you might think of yourself as insignificant or unimportant or unlovable, you just separate from that. You say, I am not that. I am not any of that. And then you get into more present moment thinking that teachers like Eckhart Tolle tell us about, where you separate from the ego. You separate from yourself, because this self that has all these attachments to worth and lovability and importance and significance, and this other self that has all these attachments, suddenly that's not us anymore. And then we're left with this curiosity about who we are. Who are you then, if you don't have those attachments? Let's go on to the last subject. This person wrote, I started my journey about a year and a half ago since coming to terms with and realizing some childhood trauma caused by a family member. Since confronting him and weekly sessions with my psychologist and quite a few of your podcasts, I really got to a place where I became more self-aware and a lot more understanding of my emotions and potential emotions that I can cause others due to my behaviors throughout time. One thing I would love to learn more about is intrusive thoughts. What once would come up when I was around 18 has now popped up again. I would love to hear more about it from a trusted voice like yours. My intrusive thoughts surround visual sexualization that make me feel extremely uncomfortable and anxious, and I really want to manage and work on it as I find it very distressing. I look forward to hopefully hearing more about this. Visual sexualization is not a term I've heard used. I think I know what you mean. I'm looking at the wiki on it right now, and it says, to make something sexual in character or quality, or to become aware of sexuality, especially in relation to men and women. Sexualization is linked to sexual objectification. According to the American Psychological Association, sexualization occurs when individuals are regarded as sex objects and evaluated in terms of their physical characteristics and sexiness. And study after study, findings have indicated that women more often than men are portrayed in a sexual manner, dressed in revealing clothing with bodily postures and facial expressions that imply sexual readiness, and they're objectified, used as a decorative object or body parts rather than the whole person. Very much in line with the body comments. So absolutely, with the visualization that you have, if you are doing it toward others, if you look at someone and you are visualizing their sexuality or experiencing a fantasy of some sort of their sexuality, and you're distressed about it. Let me ask you a question. Why are you distressed about it? Why is that a problem? When you see somebody that you feel is at all attractive and you sexualize them in your mind, how is that a problem? I want you to answer that honestly. Maybe it's religious. Maybe you're with someone and you don't want to have these thoughts. It feels like imaginative cheating. It feels like you're doing something wrong, like you're betraying in your mind. But let's just say that it wasn't. Let's just say a sexual thought is just like a thought about a movie that you saw or a book that you read or something that you said to someone else. It's just another thought. does it become an issue when it's just another thought? I want you to be really clear, because I've talked about this on an episode a long time ago, where when you have sexual thoughts about someone else, it is my opinion that they are your thoughts and that you are allowed to have them, and that resisting them only amplifies them. Trying not to have thoughts about someone or something and trying to push them away. Let me just think positively. Let me just think positively. That puts you into a state of denial and resistance that causes the thoughts that you don't want to have to amplify and usually become more distressing and annoying or distressing and makes you feel bad about yourself. You got to cut that out. I know it's easier said than done, but let me say this. Allow yourself to have the thoughts. Tell yourself it's okay to have these thoughts. You know, I told the story once where I was working in IT a long time ago, and this woman, it was a bank I was working in, and one of the bank tellers was telling me she would go to sleep at night and she would have these dreams about her being in a closet. And when somebody came along, she could sneak through the closet. She would open the closet and she would murder them. And I thought it was fascinating. And she told me this and I said, wow, that is fascinating. Why do you think you have those dreams? I didn't judge her. I didn't say, what, you're having those dreams? You need to see a psychologist, which, by the way, all her friends told her to. She told me this and I asked her, why are you having these dreams? Where do you think these come from? I really wanted to know. And she said, well, you know, I'm studying criminology and I really like to get into the minds of these serial killers to find out, you know, what's going on. Maybe I could learn from them. Maybe I can learn why they do what they do. And in that moment, it clicked. I just knew that she was dreaming this because her mind was trying things on. Her mind was trying things out. Her brain was going through the different scenarios and giving her clues and data. And it would be very helpful. I said, that is awesome. That is going to teach you so much. She looked at me funny. She didn't say a word for, I don't know, a couple seconds. And she goes, you're the first person who's ever said that. You're the first person who didn't tell me to go to a therapist. And I could tell she just felt more relaxed after that. She felt it was okay to be herself. I'm telling you, it is okay to be yourself. If you have these thoughts, it doesn't mean you're bad. It doesn't mean you're wrong. It doesn't mean you're immoral. They're thoughts. The only time it becomes a problem is when you act on these things, when you act on thoughts. But your behavior is under your control. You can do behavior that you want to do, and you can not do behavior that you don't want to do. So if you sexualize someone and you see them as a sexual object, I'm going to get flack for this too, go to town. What I mean is allow the full visual expression to happen inside your mind. Because when you do this, you take out the resistance. You take out the idea that you're wrong or bad, and you put in the thought, it's perfectly okay because we are all hardwired in a way that attracts us to other people. And to further exacerbate this and get me in trouble, take it to the limit. Take the visualization as far as you can. Make it crazy. Make it real. Put multiple people in, I don't know, whatever your fantasies are. Make the fantasy the best, most incredible fantasy you can, because it allows your system to release the energy that's inside of you. If there's a lot of built up sexual energy inside of you and you have a sexual thought and you repress it, where does the energy go? It stays there, it amplifies, and it comes out again later, probably in more and more extreme ways. And when this happens, you are more likely to act on it because you've been repressing it in yourself. So this is something that I highly encourage you to explore in yourself visually. I'm not saying act on it. That's a totally different subject. If you said, and I act on it, and I heard a lot of people along the way, then we'll have a different conversation. But because you're saying this is in my mind and I'm sexualizing and I think it's wrong or I'm getting distressed, I'm giving you the freedom to think anything you want because it's your brain, it's your mind, it's your thoughts, and you are allowed to think anything you want. You are. I know you've probably heard differently, otherwise you wouldn't have written to me, but you are allowed to think anything you want. And you're also allowed to keep those thoughts to yourself. You don't have to feel like you have to tell someone else, like, I had this fantasy of me and your best friend. That's ridiculous. You're never going to say that. You shouldn't say that because it's a thought that you're going to have, and I don't know if this number is right, but one of 60,000 times a day. So what are you going to do? Try to control all of them that come up? What if 10,000 of those are sexual thoughts and you've repressed them and repressed them and repressed them? All this energy builds and builds and builds. Then guess what? Now you're acting on these thoughts because it's still in there. Those thoughts never had a chance to express themselves. So they build up and then they come out in more and more elaborate, whatever, fantasies. So there you go. Hope this helps. Thank you for joining me today. We'll be right back. I'll say some thank yous and close the show after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. If you're having any type of relationship issue and you think it's a little bit more difficult than it should be, check out loveandabuse.com and download the Mean Workbook. Take the 200-point assessment and learn more about your relationship than maybe you've ever known. And let me share with you about the Safe Empowerment System for Social Anxiety. It is a project I'm working on with several experts in the field, many, many experts in the field, actually. And it's designed to help you during social anxiety when you're experiencing it. It's an audio program, and there are two types of audio files that you can play. One is for homework, like how can I reduce my social anxiety? But the other one are called emergency pods. And these emergency pods, you play, they're like 3 to 5 minutes long, and you play them while you're experiencing social anxiety. So you might have to sneak out and go to the bathroom or sneak outside just to play one of these if you're experiencing it, to help diminish or even dissolve the social anxiety as you're experiencing it. So that's something you may want to check out. It is a work in progress, but you can pre-order it right now for like 30% off before it launches. So it's a good time to get it if you want it. Or you can wait till launch and wait for the testimonials to come out, see if it's right for you. Go to theoverwhelmedbrain.com/safe. That's S-A-F-E, if you want to check that out. Oh, there's also a social anxiety survey there if you want. So you can fill that out too. That'll be helpful to creating the product and making sure we cover everything. Think of it as your emergency anxiety toolkit. theoverwhelmedbrain.com/safe. And I want to thank Callie for joining the patron program. Good to see you there, Callie. Thank you so much for your support. You can support the show by going to patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com and becoming a patron member. That not only shows your support, but it also is a way to get back, because I have a lot of private episodes in there, a lot of workbooks and worksheets, and the Overwhelmed Brain book is in there as well. All for download, all for you to learn some more about yourself and get more of the Overwhelmed Brain and some of the deeper topics that I go into as well. Some stuff I can't talk about on the air necessarily. And I also want to thank Kira and Steven for their donations to the show. That is amazing that people reach out to me and they want to donate just to show their support, just to say thank you. If you're finding value in this show, if it's changing your life in any way, you have the option to do that at the patron site, patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com, and there's a one-time donation option as well. And it helps us keep the show running and keep it going. And I appreciate those who have donated, those who have become patrons. And thank you again, Stephen and Kira. And finally, I want to thank Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And to close the show, I'm going to read you this final email that I didn't get to. It says, good morning, Paul. I know it's been a while and I apologize for that. My life has been going well. I still listen to you and use your advice, and it's made me a better, happier person. I found myself standing up for myself the other day to a coworker, and then found the boss standing up for him. And since I had a second job, I just quit, and I felt a huge relief. And I started realizing everything else that made me feel bad if I stayed there. And I wanted to thank you for everything that you taught me, because almost instantly my head stopped hurting. Anyway, thank you, Paul, and I hope everything is going well for you. Wow. Thank you so much for that message. And I hear you. This one job that I had for 6 months, my head had been hurting, just like you, almost daily. I just had headache after headache after headache. And then the boss called me into his office one day and said, well, we're replacing you, basically firing me. And I don't know why I didn't quit earlier. That was the best day of my life, at least in the work world. When my boss fired, that's like my only position I ever get fired from, but it was worth it because I was just experiencing so much stress. I did not have the resources. I did not have enough tenacity to stay in that position. And I am so glad that you wrote to me and said, you know what? I decided that I wasn't going to take my coworker dishonoring me, honoring my boundaries, basically dishonoring me, because he went too far and I decided to stand up to him. And then the boss stood up for him and I told the boss, look, this person is not treating me well. He's being disrespectful. And there was more to the email I didn't read, but he goes on to say that the boss said, well, he brings in more money and you don't. And so I'm thinking, wow, what an awful thing for someone to say. That means I am allowed to disrespect you as a human being because this person brings me more money. That tells me that money is more important to me than humanity. This tells me that the connection that we have as people is just not important enough. That it's more important to you to line your pockets with money than to treat me with respect, than to stand up for me when there's wrongdoing going on. This gives me a lot of insight to your character, and I don't want to work for you anymore. I'm putting words into his mouth, but this is what would go through my mind if this happened to me. If I see someone valuing money over people, I mean, to the point where they disrespect people and it's all about money, then I really don't want to hang out with you. If it's more important that you steamroll people just so you can line your pockets, I don't think I want too much to do with you. That doesn't mean if you're that person listening now that I won't talk to you. That doesn't mean I will disrespect you. I will definitely hear you out. I will definitely allow you to have a voice because I don't believe it's in our nature to be this way. I believe it's in our nature to be socially connected, to be emotionally connected, to be kind to one another, to respect one another because we all have value and we are born to value each other because we all have needs that we get from each other and we all have wants and we all have connection and we all want to bond and feel accepted and loved. I mean, all of these things I think we're born with, they just get skewed as we grow up. So when you meet the person that's rude and values something over people, got to remember that it's still in there somewhere. It doesn't mean you have to take abuse. It doesn't mean that if they're disrespecting you that you just can't say, well, you know, I'm out of here then. See you later. It just means that sometimes you have to be their lesson. You might have to be that person that says, well, there's accountability for who you are, and I'm going to make you accountable. See you later. And if they don't care, then you know where they are. If they don't care and they're just worried about making the extra buck or getting more stuff or something that it doesn't matter to them if they crush other people, then they're probably the type of person that you just have to stay away from this point on. And we'll see how life goes for them. Because I guarantee you, the person that treats other people like that, that crushes them for their own self-interest, if they were on the side of the road with a flat tire and you were driving and you saw them, you probably wouldn't stop. You wouldn't want to. And then you'd kind of sneak behind your steering wheel and you'd think, oh God, I hope they didn't see me. And then you drive by and then you kind of laugh. I mean, maybe I'm speaking for myself. Would I do that? I don't know. There might be something in me that says, well, maybe you should stop. Maybe this guy does need help. Maybe he's going to have a little touch of humanity now. And maybe by stopping and helping him, it makes him realize that people are important. And it's not all about money. It's about how we relate to one another, how we can connect to one another. And sometimes even the jerks deserve a break because I'm sure they weren't a jerk when they were born. It's up to you. That's your choice. If they're being a jerk, you don't have to stick around. And certainly if they're too radioactive to be around, I don't want you to get burned. I'm just saying that this is why I give people more leeway than maybe some other people do. For the person who wrote to me, I think you did the right thing. You got to show them that you will not be treated this way. I honor myself. I value myself. And by you treating me this way, it is out of alignment with who I am and how I want to be treated. Absolutely. I feel the same way. Sometimes you just have to stand up for yourself and make it known that you will not be treated that way. And it's time to be treated differently. If they don't want to treat you differently, then you have to remove them from your life. And it can be scary. I can't quit. What if I quit? I won't have any money. I won't get a paycheck. I won't be able to afford my rent. I won't be able to pay for food. Well, it depends on what you value most. Well, I value food. You might. I valued my integrity and my character. And when I was faced with the option of quitting or staying to make a paycheck and continuing under the conditions that devalued me as a person, that stifled me as an individual, I decided to value myself over all and got out of that situation, risking that I might not make money. And it was the best choice I ever made. It was scary, but it was the best choice I ever made. Not saying you should do this. I'm not putting you in any jeopardy here and saying just quit your job or just leave your relationship. I'm just saying that sometimes we believe we have no choice. When we do have a choice, we just don't like to face that choice because it means stepping into an unknown that we are afraid of. And sometimes we have to. Sometimes we have to step into that unknown fear just to get through the other side and realize that there's something much greater that has been waiting for us there. Big leap of faith, I know. And because of that, just keep your mind open. This will help you step into a place of power. It'll also help you be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve, no matter what you do. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.